This hour is brought to you by Cars for Kids.
It's time for 5 on. Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris bring you 5 topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Oh, here we go. 5 on it. You know the deal. 5 questions. Sometimes they have sub-questions within the questions. Russell Dorsey is fired up to take part in 5 on it for the second time in his illustrious midday career. Correct, Russ?
Sure.
Very positive thoughts from Russ Dorsey, who's in for Layla today.
5 on it. Number 1.
In the wake of the offensive struggles of Cubs outfielder and friend of the show, Ian Happ, manager Craig Counsell experimented with the leadoff spot this weekend. Second baseman Nico Hoerner hit in the top spot in the batting order Saturday, and first baseman Michael Busch hit leadoff on Sunday. Who do you think the Cubs should go with in the leadoff spot?
I think they should go with Ian Happ, but he's not there right this second, so it's okay to give him a rest. I just like Craig Counsell's willingness to shuffle things around. We didn't see a lot of that early this season outside of Pete Crow Armstrong moving from the bottom third of the order into now the cleanup spot. I will say this. It can be Busch. It can be Hoerner. It can be Happ. Whichever one he feels like is the one. The guy I do not want to see in the leadoff spot, it's very simple. I don't want to see Pete Crow Armstrong in the leadoff spot. He's not there to take pitches. He's not there to give guys behind him a peek. He's there to attack pitches, whether they be in the strike zone or not, and hit them out of the ballpark, or if he gets on base, to run around the bases like it's a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Yeah, I can't have the guy with the 302 on base percentage in the leadoff spot. I'm fine with the platoon, right? Like, two guys with over 950 OPS against left-handed, right-handed pitching in Nico Hoerner and Michael Busch, respectively. Keep that rolling. Keep that rolling. Why, if it works in the, let's call it, through the trade deadline, and you're still scoring runs, and we're not worried that the Cubs aren't going to score runs, and if you're more productive with that, and then you have Ian Happ, a guy who can hit the ball out of the ballpark in that 6-7 spot in the lineup, maybe as high as 5th, why not keep that going and see what you have there?
I think the other thing is, when you look at where that lineup has been productive and what the weakness has been specifically against better left-handed starting pitching, what I saw in Saturday's game against Max Fried, who is certainly a stuff and strikeout, a swing and miss guy, and their ability to work counts and take advantage of a bad day from Max Fried and make his day even worse, let's keep that going. So whatever works against left-handed starters, you need to capitalize that on that if you're Craig Counsell. So whatever works in that situation. And if it is Nico Hoerner leading off, so be it.
Number 2.
We're going to do a little all-star break exercise. We're going to take both baseball teams in Chicago and go through some categories. Category number 1. Who is the MVP on the Cubs roster and who is the MVP on the White Sox roster?
So on the Cubs roster, I really think the MVP is still going to be, in my estimation, Pete Crow Armstrong. Not just because he's having a breakout season, but because he's doing it in every phase of the game, except for maybe getting on base, as you mentioned, the 302 on base percentage. But that's okay, because when your slug is slugging like that, you could take the hit at on base. But he runs the bases well. He steals bags. His outfield defense is superb. And just the energy and electricity he brings every time he steps to the plate, whether it's in a home ballpark at Wrigley or whether it's on the road, PCA gets the people going. PCA is provocative. PCA is that dude. And I'm hoping for something spectacular from him in the All-Star game, whether it's a play in the field, whether it's something he does at the plate or on the base pass. That's the thing. He can be so electric in so many different ways. That's what makes him exciting. I think Tuesday could possibly be his coming out party.
I'm going to do something different here. PCA is the obvious answer. So I'm going to go MVP, not named PCA. And I'm going Michael Busch. Michael Busch has a slash line of 290, 375, 550. It's good for a 925 OPS. He has 15 doubles, 3 triples, 19 homers, 59 runs batted in. He gets on base. He's also turned himself into a solid first baseman. And I was concerned there that they might not need to find another place for him. Michael Bush has been arguably the breakout star in Major League Baseball this year. When you look at across the board, what he's been able to do offensively, that trade that the Cubs made to acquire Michael Bush, it's turned out all right because you have a guy in the middle of your lineup that has proven that he can bang. Like, this is a guy that's going to finish with between 30 and 40 homers, between 50 and 70 walks, drive in close to 100, score close to 100 runs, and after a little transition year, has turned himself into a tick above average at worst first baseman with the opportunity to continue to get better at the position. That's a great find by the Cubs, and salute to their minor league scouting department for saying this is a guy that we should go after and acquire because he's a very talented player who didn't have an opportunity to blossom in LA.
Blot.
Also, I need to tell you, that's why the Dodgers are the Dodgers, because Michael Bush is this good and had no place to play.
Yeah, that's kind of scary, right? That part of it. What I'm interested to see Michael Bush second half of the season is the increased opportunities against left-handed pitching are coming. We saw him start in Friday's game, not against Max Fried, but against Carlos Rodon. If he continues to get the opportunities and he can keep his OPS above 900, woo!
I also need to tell you, Kyle Schwarber wasn't always a guy that people wanted to face left-handed pitching.
Well, but he put on the armor, and now he's a different dude.
And then he has been, over the last four seasons, one of the best hitters against left-handed pitching. Currently has an OPS above 900 against lefties. Like, sometimes guys just need an opportunity to struggle and then make that change.
We'll see if Craig Council gives them room to do so.
Who is your White Sox most valuable player?
It's Adrian Hauser. I know he hasn't been there all season. I don't care. It's Adrian Hauser. The dude has been phenomenal. He should bring back something in a trade. I could not picture that for a guy that you're paying less than $1.4 million on a one-year contract for. He has been a revelation. He is throwing harder than he has ever thrown in his career. It's Adrian Hauser, and it's not particularly close.
I'm going to go my White Sox MVP, and you'll see why I'm doing it. My MVP for the White Sox is Ethan Katz.
Oh,
their pitching coach, because I think what he's been able to do since he arrived in Chicago is be able to identify serviceable starting pitchers. I think what they've been able to do with Shane Smith is for a team in a rebuild that where you need to find some development wins. Shane Smith is a development win. I know he's an all-star, and I know his last couple of starts prior to the break have not been great, but that is a guy that had an ERA in the low threes up until about June. Sean Burke, same thing. Like, a guy outside of a couple starts has been right around the mid threes. And I think when you think about the Chicago White Sox and what they needed to show this year after having the worst record in Major League Baseball, show some development wins, right? Show that you are a better team somehow this year than you were last year. And I think as you continue forward, if I'm a White Sox fan, I say, okay, this team might not have the talent yet, but they've been able to develop some players where you're like, I can see what the vision is once they do have that top-tier talent when Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith get to the big leagues and those guys are in the front of your rotation, and then these guys that you've been able to develop into serviceable arms are in the middle to back end of it.
All right, we're going to continue our All-Star break exercise here as part of Five on It with Rahimi and Harris. Russell Dorsey is in for Layla Rahimi. I'm going to ask you guys to name the most underrated player on the Cubs roster.
It's Carson Kelly. The fact that he's come out and done what he's been able to do for over half a season, and he had that little dip in late May, early June, and he's come back strong as ever in recent weeks and has held down a pitching staff that's pitched as well as the Cubs have, both starters and relievers. With Miguel Amaya missing this much time, it's got to be Carson Kelly. He's been as good as he's been with the Cubs, better than anywhere else he's played. And I know he's a guy that you expected to have, you know, a significant role on the team, but a 276, 376, 523 slash line, an OPS, 1/1000th below 900 at 899, an OPS plus of 158. He's got 12 bombs already in just 62 games. It's Carson Kelly.
Yeah, it's Carson Kelly. It's not particularly close either. And I know teams in this day and age in baseball like to have the two tandem catcher set up where you basically split the time between the two. Maybe one guy gets a few more ABs than the other. But Carson Kelly, he's been so good, and also another underrated pickup for the Cubs where he's been so good. When Miguel Amaya comes back, you're like, ah.
I mean, there's a conversation to be had. How does that split work?
Oh, you got to go. If he's still rolling like this when he comes back, you got to say 70-30?
Yeah, I was thinking more 66-33, like two-thirds. At that
point, you might have to do 70-30.
You're probably right. Yeah.
But yeah, like he has to get the ABs.
I could see a lineup in which he gives somebody else a day off and he can DH when Amaya's in the catcher role as well. So, yeah.
Who do you consider to be the most underrated player on the White Sox roster?
Underrated's tough because you're saying they're way better than we think they are. We don't think anybody on the White Sox is that great. I mean, look at Miguel Vargas and what we were talking about him. He's now batting under .220 on the year. I mean, I guess most underrated might be Mike Tauchman, even though we know he's good. Like, this guy's going to bring something at the deadline. He just continues to go out and hit in whatever role. And he doesn't start every day. He just does whatever is needed. He'll come off the bench and get you a big hit. So it's probably Tauchman.
I'm going with your MVP, Adrian Hauser. 5-2 with a 1.56 ERA. Yeah, because I had zero expectations for Adrian Hauser coming to the White Sox kind of just took a flyer on him. And I think he's been much better than most people realize who are not paying attention to the Chicago White Sox on a daily. Like, if you ask 30 baseball fans about who has one of the lowest ERAs in all of Major League Baseball that's on the Chicago White Sox, I'd say 29 of them wouldn't be able to say Adrian Hauser. And for that reason, I think he's their most underrated player.
Okay.
All right, the final part of our All-Star break exercise. This will just be an express version in the interest of time. Name the player to watch in the second half for both the Cubs and the White Sox. Just give me the names.
Name for me, pretty simple. Matt Shaw. Watch him while you can. I don't know how much longer he's going to be in this situation.
Wow. I put trade acquisition to be named later as my player to watch in the second half for the Cubs.
That's such a cop-out.
It's not. It allows you to understand that there are going to be some changes and a guy who should impact their playoff roster. For the White Sox, Colson Montgomery. I think you've seen some things where you're saying, okay, like this is a real deal type of player that could be, you know, a big boost for the White Sox. Has a .382 on base percentage in his 10 games in the big leagues, and it's a really good sign that he's not overwhelmed.
Close to Colson Montgomery, I'm going to go though with Edgar Carroll because I just want to see, can he put together a whole season of being better than average at the plate? And because I'm trying to figure out what that catcher situation is going to look like in the future with him and Kyle too.
Number three.
The Bears rookies report to training camp this Friday. How much, if at all, have your expectations changed with the news that Ryan Poles has been given an extension through 2029, matching the length left on head coach Ben Johnson's contract?
I think there's less pressure, honestly, because if he was in his 1 year left, and now we know it was 2 years left on his contract, and he was like, oh, they better produce now. It would be a lot like watching what Jed Hoyer has done with the Cubs this year. But because we now know he's good for 2029, they can get off to a slow start, take their time, as long as they can say at the end of the season, look at Caleb Williams' growth. Look how much better this offense is weeks, say, 14 through 18 compared to weeks 1 through 4. That's going to be more of the measurement than it will be the actual wins and losses in year one of Ben Johnson.
When you know you're not going to get fired or the threat of being fired isn't there, it probably does change how you operate because you don't have to necessarily make the bold move, right? Like Jed Hoyer, on the last year of his deal, you say, oh, man, we don't make the postseason. I might not be here anymore. I'm going to go get Kyle Tucker, and we got to get maybe the postseason this year. And so for the Bears, I look at it and I say, all right, like, with less pressure, do you operate differently? My gut still says there's expectations there because we are talking about the Chicago Bears. You do have the expectations after you bring in what we talked about earlier was the best head coaching candidate available in Ben Johnson and year two of Caleb Williams, who you saw flashes of what that could look like, 20 touchdowns, six interceptions in his first year in the NFL with horrible offensive coordinators and a head coach that got fired midseason.
Okay, that's believable. But I just feel like there's less pressure. I'm not saying there's not any pressure. There's just less than there was when you thought this might be his last.
There is 60% of the pressure still okay. there.
I'll go with that.
Number four.
Marshall, Russell, who is the best executive in Chicago right now, and who's the worst?
That's such a great question. It's a question that you start thumbing through and start looking.
You start looking.
I think the best executive in Chicago right now is Jed Hoyer. He's the guy without a future is the best executive in Chicago. And I think the worst executive resides with the Bulls. I think it's Arturis Karnišovas.
Yeah, I think it has to, based off of everything we've seen lately, it's Jed Hoyer. Had to tear down what was the 2016 core, rebuild their farm system, and now he has what is one of the best teams in the National League, and we just talked about them as being a World Series contender. Also, hasn't made it to the postseason since he took over as an executive. So, like, when we're talking about how the city has gone,
pressure.
There is some pressure there. The worst executive, I'm with you. I'm going to say Arturis Karnišovas and Mark Eversley, because they are a tandem.
Acme.
The Bulls are, they are in the abyss in basketball where I don't know when the next time they will be a playoff team is. And I'm not counting the play-in as the playoffs because it's not.
It's just the postseason. They're 5 to 10 years away from being 5 to 10 years away.
10 years is crazy, but I'm 100% with you.
Well, the way that works is when you're 5 to 10 years away from being 5 to 10 years away, you could just be 10 years away. 5 plus 5 is 10. Or you could be 20 years away.
You know Kobe White and Nikola Vucevic are still on the roster?
I do know that. They should be traded for assets. The Bulls don't value assets, so that's why we are where we are. They're allergic to draft picks, especially the ones that are unprotected future possible lottery picks. They don't like those. A lot of decisions. You see what they did with their last one?
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that in just a few minutes.
Number five.
Fifth question here. Five on it with Raheemy and Harris. Russ Dorsey is in. So it's usually a life question here. And I have a car for the first time since 2018. And I've lived in D.C., lived in Chicago, had a car. First time driving a car in the city. It sucks. I hate having a car in the city. And number one reason why is because finding a parking spot in the city is it's torture. I hate it so much. And now I understand all the people who are in their car listening to this fabulous radio station. I understand it now. The fifth question is, why is parking in the city so insufferable?
Well, I think it's insufferable because we live in a major metropolitan area with 3 million people. And people commute in and they don't use enough public transportation and they don't walk enough. And you end up with not enough parking spots. Let's be very clear. There's not enough easily accessible parking spots, and that's why it's bad, and it's only going to get worse, Robbie. I just want to let you know. Nothing speaks future good about Chicago parking.
Why does it suck? It's one of the largest cities in the country. There is a big concentration of people that live here. So naturally, a lot of people
Let's just
cars.
Not drive cars. We have transportation. Let's just take the
transportation. And here you are, driving your car.
But I like to drive, but as somebody with a car that lives in the city of Chicago, I don't drive necessarily unless I have to. And I've gotten to the point in life, and Marshall, I know Marshall's going to make a joke here, I just valet because I don't want to do the thing where, let's say I have a 7:30 reservation and it's 7:25. Now I have to circle the restaurant for 15 minutes hoping that somebody backs out and I find a spot. Like, just take my $15. But Robbie, do you know that the city of Chicago doesn't even own the meters in the city?
Wait, are you kidding me?
So in 2008.
Wait, is this real?
Yes.
100% real. That's 100% why I didn't tell you in
this
group chat.
Flawed. Why did they do that?
In 2008, former Chicago mayor Richard Daley privatized the parking meters. And so the city leased the meters to a company known as Chicago Parking Meters LLC, based in UAE, United Arab Emirates,
okay,
for $1.1 billion because the city needed the cash. Since then, the meters have generated over $2 billion.
They really traded parking for cash considerations?
So this is the... Yes.
Are you kidding me?
So, Robbie, this isn't what even the worst part.
Deal. That Are lease, they the Bulls?
That lease was for 75 years. There is still 58 years on that deal. And UAE, the Chicago Parking Meters LLC, has already gotten their money back and an extra billion.
How is this not like talked about as one of the worst trades of all time?
Oh, it is one of the worst trades of all time.
Like, if we talk about Luka, like, that's one of the worst trades I've ever seen.
1,000%.
Who's this mayor's name?
Mayor Daley.
Oh, my God.
Mayor Daley, the most famous mayor in the city.
Oh, my God. He makes Nico Harrison look like a saint. Are you kidding me?
This
is the worst deal I've ever heard.
Robbie, I was in the eighth grade when this happened. And at the time, it was just like, oh, the city got a billion. We'll see if it works out for him. And now people are like, woof.
Way to go, mayor.
It is woof.